We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, 12th chapter, verses 1 to 16. This is verse 1. Rahubanavacha namar namakarana vigrahaya sarupatu chikita vigrahaya namopatu tadi jabantulinga nikota nitya nirpavaya tupyam. King Rahubana said, "Oh, most exalted personality, you are not different from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By the influence of your true self, all kinds of contradiction in the Shastras have been removed. In the dress of a friend of a Brahmin, you are hiding your transcendental blissful position. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you." So what do you remember from Brij and Prabhu's class, Sankirtan?
The attachment of mind.
Attachment of mind.
Yes,
the mind is a cause of everything. I think all of these verses will explain that to us, the nature of the mind. And as you say, he's a Vedavada. He's the second verse of 11th chapter. There's a difference between Vedavada and Tattvavada. And the king was Vedavada and Jadabharat was Tattvavada. So you have to come at least to the level of Tattvavada in order to get free from material entanglement. Anything else from that class, Madhavendra Puri? Pitfalls of the mind.
Basically, from everything in this world.
All of our sufferings are due to the mind.
And ahankara, mind.
Ahankara, chitta.
They tend to.
Right, they take us away.
Take us away. Acting senses.
Right, they transform.
Yes,
we're going so fast that you forget who's speaking here. It's very similar, I mean, in one sense. Not very similar, but there are similarities. So Rahugana, he was very puzzled. He thought, "I'm doing my duty as a king. I'm doing very nicely. But you're telling I'm not the king and this is not reality." And even in chapter 12, we're going to hear even more heavy instructions from Jadabharat in that line. So we'll look at the flip chart as a review. You can just turn it over. The third verse is, material happiness is like a dream, grihamedi sokyam. Then the mind is like an independent elephant. If the mind is controlled by lust and anger, it causes higher or lower births. Then verse 6, the mind causes pious and impious suffering and enjoyment. Verse 7, the mind causes bodily appearance, bondage, and liberation. Of course, here's liberation is good. At least here we have a good thing about the mind. Then verse 8, the attached mind causes bondage, the detached mind causes liberation, just like a lamp burning its wick. Verse 9, the mind's field of activities is the sense objects, sense activities, and different types of body, society, friendship, and personality. And then in verse 10, the 11th function is the false ego. Okay, you can flip it. And then all these material causes are listed. Material causes of our problems here, of the mind's transformations. These five things cause the material mind to transform. So the five things, javya, physical elements, svabhava, nature, ashaya, culture, karma, predestined results and actions, kala, time. So if you take these five material causes and you add them to the 11 functions, which we heard of before, then it transforms into millions and millions of functions. So without Krishna consciousness, there's so many ideas and activities in the mind, manifest in two states, waking and dream state, disappearing in deep sleep or trance. Then above the mind, there is the two chetrapyas. Verse 13 and 14. You can flip it. So 15, if the conditioned soul does these four things, accepts a material body, he's not free of desire, does not conquer the six enemies, and does not come to the spiritual platform, then he has to wander in different species. So I had a nice reference here about the six enemies. This is described in Bhajan Rahasya, that what is the cause of these six enemies in six ways is weakness of heart, or hrida dobhyam. Four kinds of weakness of heart: tucha sakti, kutinati, matsarya, and swapratishtata. And these six waves are described as jara, mrityu, kshut, pipasa, moha, and shoka. And these six enemies are kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mara, and matsarya. And that's not here. Anyway, I told you who they are. Kam, krodh, lobh, moha, mara. It should have been there, but it somehow didn't make it on the chart. Yes, it was there, but it didn't make it. Okay. So then, because the mind is affected, it's okay now. By disease, lamentation, illusion, attachment, greed, and enmity, it creates bondage and a false sense of intimacy. So how to control the mind? Prabhupada says in one word, neglect. Neglect. Ignore the mind. That's how you control it. Of course, Bhaktisiddhanta has a few other suggestions, that you can beat the mind with shoes when you wake up and with a broom when you go to sleep, before you go to sleep. And that way you'll control the mind. And Srila Prabhupada has some other suggestions, and that is engage the mind in Krishna's service. So you can choose which method you would like to use to control the mind. So now here in the first verse, Jada Bharat is praising... King Rahukana is praising Jada Bharat. He says, "Now my illusion is gone. By your mercy, I offer my obeisances to you who are hiding in the dress of a Brahmin." So verse 2, "O best of the Brahmins, my body is filled with dirty things, and my vision has been bitten by the serpent of pride. Due to my material conceptions, I am diseased. Your nectarian instructions are the proper medicine for one suffering from such a fever, and they are cooling waters for one scorched by the heat." So what happens if your vision is bitten? How can your vision be bitten? Your vision is bitten by pride. So what happens if you have a vision that's bitten by pride? What are the kind of thoughts that might run through your mind? Pachi. Everybody's lower than you. You are the real controller and the star of the show, and that's how you feel. This is bitten by pride, yes. Oh. Right. Right. There's a story in Mahabharata which he mentioned. When Duryodhan was sent, who's he sent by? Dronacharya. He was sent by Dronacharya to find somebody who is greater than you. So Duryodhan went out searching the world or wherever, and he found nobody. Came back, I said, "I couldn't find anyone greater than me." Then he sent Yudhisthira, "Find someone lower than you." And Yudhisthira went out searching everywhere, and he said, "I could not find anyone lower than me." So this is going on. In the middle of the purport, "The entire world is going on under the bodily conception and creating a hellish condition unfit for any gentleman's living. The instructions given to King Rahugana by Jada Bharat are very valuable. They are like medicine that can save one from a snake bite. The Vedic instructions are like nectar and cool water for one suffering from scorching heat." So if anyone's feeling the heat of the material world, this is the medicine for that heat, a fever. So pride here is compared to a serpent, a snake. Why is it compared to a snake? Why is pride, yes? Can come suddenly and bite you. And then you die. Yeah, pride can kill you. Pride can kill you. This is why it's like a serpent. By identification with our body, we do experience death. So all of our material conceptions will be cured by the instructions of Jada Bharat. So let us bathe in these waters. Oh, there's another cure for snake bite, nectar of devotion. Our nectar of devotion teacher didn't come. What's that?
The senses are conquered.
Oh yeah, that's another. That's not. That's another. That's Prabodhananda Saraswati.
The senses are like serpents.
The senses are like snakes, but if you take out the poisoned teeth, poisoned fangs, then they won't harm you. That's Prabodhananda Saraswati. Kaivalyam Narakayate.
You could also think this: the poison of the snake poisons our intelligence.
The poison is our intelligence.
They lose sight of what you are.
Yes, if the intelligence is the servant of lust, anger, greed, and all these things, then it is poison. So nectar of devotion, it says, the incense offered to the deity may also cure you from the poisonous effects of material contamination, just like curing a snake bite. Verse 3, whatever doubts I have about a particular subject matter, I shall ask you about later. For the time being, these mysterious yoga instructions you have given me for self-realization appear very difficult to understand. Please repeat them in a simple way so I can understand them. My mind is very inquisitive and I want to understand this clearly. Verse 4, O Master of Yogic Power, you said that fatigue resulting from moving the body here and there is appreciated by direct perception, but actually there is no fatigue. It simply exists as a matter of formality. By such inquiries and answers, no one can come to the conclusion of the absolute truth. Because of your presentation of this statement, my mind is a little disturbed. So he hasn't understood. And on one level, we experience fatigue, but Jada Bharat says, no, this is just a formality. So Jada Bharat is telling the king that what you're saying, this is very superficial. You are not going deeply into the deeper level of reality. So Rahugana says, yes, I don't understand. Please say it again. Make it in a more easy way to understand. So again, Jada Bharat is speaking. Verse 5 and 6. The self-realized Brahman, Jada Bharat said, among the various material combinations and permutations, there are various forms in earthly transformations. For some reason, these move on the surface of the earth and are called palanquin carriers. So now he's bringing him down to the present reality, that there's these palanquin carriers. You understand that? So he can understand. He's seeing in front of his eyes palanquin carriers. Those material transformations which do not move are gross material objects like stones. In any case, the material body is made of earth and stone in the form of feet, ankles, calves, knees, thighs, torso, throat, and head. Upon the shoulders is the wooden palanquin, and within the palanquin is the so-called king of Salvira. The body of the king is simply another transformation of earth, but within that body, your lordship is situated and falsely thinking you are the king of the state of Salvira. So you think you're the king, but actually you're nothing but a handful of dirt. So now he's really reducing his ego. This body that you're so proud of, you're so proud, it's just dirt. It's just earth. It's coming from the earth, and it will become earth, and it's earth right now, and you think it's the king. So this is how he's destroying his misconceptions. So Prabhupada, in the middle of the purport, how does Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answer the argument that when the body is fatigued, the soul must be suffering? So this is one of his questions. How it seems the soul is suffering when the body is tired. So how does Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answer this argument? Prabhupada quotes in purport, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Yes, Sankirtan, no.
I'm just looking at it.
Yeah, what does he say?
So although the child's body is very delicate, he does not feel fatigued, nor that the parents think that his ornaments should be taken away.
Right, so a child has heavy ornaments, he's decorated nicely, but the parents don't take his ornaments away. He likes them. So the living entity has nothing to do with bodily pains and pleasures. These are simply mental concoctions. So how does this analogy relate, how does this defeat the argument that the child doesn't mind the heavy ornaments? Yes.
It's according to how we think that we perceive.
Yes.
Because the child likes to be beautiful and the parents like to see the child beautiful, then they don't, he doesn't
right.
feel the weight of the argument.
Yes.
Similarly, we also feel pain and pleasure because we think we are bothered.
Yes. So how is it that we can not feel pain and pleasure, like this child who's decorated with ornaments? How can we be like this child? How can we actually experience this feeling that although our body is tired, although our body is hungry, although our body is rebelling, our mind is rebelling, I don't want to sit here for 2 hours. How can we? Yes?
When we do something which is very attractive to us, then we will not feel tired.
Okay, if something, we like to do something, then we won't feel tired. Just like yesterday, my son with his friends to Kushim Sarovar for 6 hours, 8 hours. They were just swimming, and they didn't feel tired. 6 hours swimming. So anybody else, it would be like a torture to be physically active in the hot, hot sun for 6 hours. It would be difficult. But because they were happy in the water, they thought, this is fun. So therefore, they did it. And so, yes, if something is very attractive to you, then you don't consider the problems of the body. You go beyond it. So this is our goal, actually. We want to have such attraction for Krishna and for Krishna's devotional service that we will go beyond. Just like Parikshit Maharaj, he was hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, and now he's in the fifth canto. It must have been like, well, 2 days, 2-3 days must have passed, and he's fasting and he's not sleeping. He's simply hearing Bhagavatam. So this is going on. So what is the cause of suffering? We heard yesterday it is all the mind. But so what is it in the mind that causes us suffering?
Identification.
Yes. False identification. Vanamali.
Mind is to transcend, accepting and maintain.
Yes. Yes.
Unfulfilled desires.
Or expectations. But there's one thing that causes all suffering in the mind. There's one thing that we are... If I tell you, then you'll get it. I won't give you any more clues. It's one thing. Yes?
I am the mind.
Something... I'm the enjoyer. Okay. The question is, what is it that really causes our suffering in the world, in this world? What is it? Yes.
I'm alone.
Yeah, separated. You're getting... Yes, yes. We're separated from Krishna. We've forgotten our connection with Krishna, and that's why we suffer. The mind, here it says, it can be cause of liberation, it can be cause of bondage. When it's connected with Krishna, then we can be happy. And when we're disconnected from Krishna, then we suffer. So this is the cause of suffering. Verse 7. Rahugana... is listening to the instructions. Jada Bharat says, it is a fact, however, that these innocent people carrying your palanquin without payment are certainly suffering due to this injustice. Their condition is very lamentable because you have forcibly engaged them in carrying your palanquin. This proves that you are cruel and unkind, yet due to false prestige you are thinking you are protecting the citizens. This is ludicrous. You are such a fool. You could not have been adored as a great man in an assembly of persons advanced in knowledge. So the king had a conception of himself as a great protector of the citizens, and he's also elevating the citizens, and everything he does is for their benefit. Whereas in fact, now Jada Bharat is saying, no, you're not. You're an exploiter of the citizens. You are causing them great suffering. You think you're so great, and you're forcing them to carry your palanquin. So now he's saying, yes, there is fatigue, there is suffering, and you're the cause. You're the cause of the suffering because of your false conception. So how many of us have some false conception of ourselves which causes suffering to others? We have, yes, we all have some false conception, and because we think that I'm better than this one, or maybe it's just a small insect that we think we're better than, and so then we... Like just this morning, the monkeys were coming and turning on my tap outside to get a drink of water. And I'm thinking, oh, rascal monkeys, chase them away. And my daughter said, no, they're thirsty, let them drink. But the problem is they don't turn off the tap when they finish. They just let the water run.
wouldn't mind if they turned it off. But then I was thinking, you know, oh yeah, these are rascal monkeys. Get them out of here. So it's because we have these conceptions of ourselves, then we cause other living entities suffering. And she was thinking, oh, you know, he's thirsty, let him drink. So we have different conceptions and different ways of looking at things. And so how many times we have caused others to suffer just because we think that we are greater than them. But actually, if you look at it from the vision of eternity, you can see that who are we? We're just this big, 1/10,000th tip of a hair. And so are they. So what's the difference between us and the ant, or us and the mosquito? So Jada Bharat is ripping apart all the misconceptions the king has. So we can also understand that we are in the same position as the king. We're also just a bunch of dirt that's moving around and thinking we're so great. Yes. What's that?
They calculated the chemicals in this body.
Chemicals in the body.
It is 170 rupees.
Yeah,
oh, we're worth 172 rupees, the body.
So much water inside.
The chemicals. Water, yes, water. Of course, water is expensive these days. They forgot the water. Bisleri. Right. So water is there. So what actually was the king's fault? According to Srila Prabhupada, he gives some reason why he was at fault, actually. There was something that he neglected to do. I don't know which purport. Yes.
He's not taking advice from the Brahmins.
Yes, yes.
Therefore, he remains in the exploiting mentality.
Right. So this was Rahugana's fault. He did not take advice of the Brahmins. So now, by circumstance, he's being forced to take advice of the Brahmins. So, verse 8, all of us, including us, on the surface of the globe, are living entities in different forms. Some of us are moving, and some not moving. All of us come into existence, remain for some time, and are annihilated when the body is again mingled with the earth. We are all simply different transformations of the earth. Different bodies and capacities are simply transformations of the earth that exist in name only. For everything grows out of the earth, and when everything is annihilated, it again mingles with the earth. In other words, we are but dust, and we shall but be dust. Everyone can consider this point. Why are we dust only? Why is this so significant here, that we are only dust? Yeah. Madhavendra Puri.
Tejo Vardhami Dangita. So everything is transformation of Brahman.
Okay, everything is, but that, what does that have to do with?
So we are insignificant. It's always changing. So in one sense, the elements don't even exist because they're not enduring.
Mm-hmm. I think you're going up a few verses. Yeah.
This body is coming, like we are eating from the earth.
Right. We're eating dust, things coming from dust, and the body is made of dust. So Prabhupada, he used to always quote in the Bible, there's this dust thou art and dust thou beest, that now you are dust and you will become dust. So in the purport, at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, if one studies the earth, he naturally understands the byproducts of the earth. The Vedas therefore enjoin yasmin vigate sarvamevam vigatam bhavati. If one simply understands the original cause, Krishna, cause of all causes, then naturally everything else is understood, although it may be presented in different varieties. So, but actually this is a type of philosophy that this verse, that Jada Bharat is speaking now. And I think also it will be coming in the future verses. What philosophy is this that, okay, now we're just dust and then it will be finished? And we'll become dust. What kind of philosophy is this?
Buddhist.
Shunyavad philosophy. Krishna also. Yes. This Krishna preaches a little bit of this in Bhagavad Gita too. That you're simply, you come into being and then you're finished. So this was Professor Kotovsky's idea. And what is the, if you believe in this philosophy, then how do you behave in the world? Not indifferent. Well, yeah. You should enjoy, yes, because there's nothing later. So that's their philosophy, that since there's nothing after death, so we should enjoy now. Because now is the time, the only time we can enjoy. After death, there is nothing. Eat, drink, and be merry for after death. Hmm? Buddhists, yeah. Buddhists don't believe that because they don't think there's enjoyment. Their philosophy is there's only suffering. So therefore, don't worry. You just act properly in this life, and then after, it's all finished after. And if you do the right thing, then you'll become void. You'll become void after death. So why are we dust? The Christians say that because after you die, there's three ways of taking care of the dead body. Anybody know those three ways, Maharaj?
Kremi,
vid, and pashma. Yes, kremi means worms. So it becomes worms, your body becomes worms if you bury it. The worms will eat the body. And if, is it? Oh, no, no.
Vid.
Vid, stool. Yeah. Stool, sorry. Yeah, that's...
If the dog or the turtles eat it.
Yeah, if you throw the body away, it becomes, the dogs and the vultures eat it, becomes stool. Yes. Kremi, vid, and pashma, ashes, if you burn the body. So ashes is a kind of dust, form of earth. And the stool also turns to earth, and then if it's buried, it also becomes dust. So verse 9, actually we can put something up on the board. Maybe you can just write next to varieties, names, in parentheses, okay? Because we heard here that how it is actually it's in name only. Yeah, next here to variety. Yeah, just put names. Yeah, in parentheses. Yeah, in parentheses around. Yeah, on this side and that side. Yeah, that's it. Thank you. So this is in name only. We have all these varieties, but it's just a bunch of names for different forms of dust. And what is Tejo, Vardi, Mridam, earth, water, fire. So now he's going to try to explain different causes of the varieties in this world. First he says, well, actually it's the earth. Earth is the cause. That was verse 8. Now in verse 9 he's going to say, well, actually if you want to go back a little further, you'll find there's something that comes before the earth. So here verse 9, one may say, varieties arise from the planet Earth itself. So that's what he said in verse 8. However, although the universe may temporarily appear to be the truth, it ultimately has no real existence. The Earth was originally created by a combination of atomic particles. So then let's put that up here. You can put atom above the Earth coming down with an arrow to the Earth. So now he's saying, no, it's atoms. This is the cause. Atoms come from atom, O-M, yes, atom, O-M, and then put an arrow down to the earth. Yes, thank you. So he says, no, it's the atom. This is causing the earth, and that's causing varieties. So now he's saying something different. But let's read the rest of the verse. The earth was originally created by a combination of atomic particles, but these particles are impermanent. Actually, the atom is not the cause of the universe, although some philosophers think so. It is not a fact. The varieties found in this material world simply result from atomic juxtapositions or combination. So what philosophy is this? Vaisheshika. There's another name for it. Vaisheshika. Which vad is that? It's a kind of vad. You know, which is something vad, like Maya vad, or this vad, or that vad. Yes, Paramanuvad. There's six darshans. So this is one of the six darshans, Vaisheshika. And Vaisheshika is Paramanuvad. But Jadabara is defeating this philosophy, so let's cross out the atom. You can keep it there, but just put an X through it. So now Jadabara is actually defeating it. First he's proposing it, but then he's saying the other side. No, no, it's not the atom. He's crossing it out. So why is he crossing it out? Why is it not the atom? Why is he saying it's not the atom? Yes.
Impermanent.
Yes, it's temporary. It's not eternal. You need something eternal. Yes. Paramanu? Yes. 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 So he forgot. Of course, he didn't forget. But that's coming later. We're still... You always come ahead. You want to bring, but that's good because Prabhupada also always comes ahead. Don't forget Krishna. It's Krishna, actually. He's between the atom. He's in the atom. Actually, it's Krishna. But we'll find that a few verses later on because he's going to go through some philosophies first and defeat them also. He's defeating Paramanuvad. So Vaisheshika, which rishi is, or rishis, explain this Paramanuvad? Which of the six? Kanad, yes, Kanad. Kanad Rishi. So I in the 10th canto, 87th chapter, verse 25, in that purport, there's a summary of the six darshans. And in that summary, by our Gopi Pranadana and Hridananda Maharaj, they explain that their philosophy is that which is of the smallest side, the atom, is eternal, actually. They are saying it is eternal, but Jadabharat says no. And then Kanad says that there are also other non-atomic entities, including souls and a supreme soul, and they are also eternal. But the problem is that in their cosmology, the souls and supersoul have only very small roles in the atomic production of the universe. So Vyasadeva defeats this philosophy in his Vedanta Sutra 2.2.12. This is all in that purport, that according to Vedanta Sutra, you cannot claim that at the time of creation, atoms combine together because they're impelled by some karma that is inside the atoms themselves, since atoms, in their primeval state before combining, have no ethical responsibility that might lead them to acquire pious or sinful reactions. So atoms cannot act and create karma. So there's no reason why they should combine into something that has karma. So that's how Vedvyas defeats Paramanuvad. This is 10, 87, 25. If you ever want to consult about the six darshans, that's a very good purport. They're described in the verse 25 and they're defeated in the purport. They're described and defeated. It's a very good purport there. 10, 87, 25. So then they say another thing. Also, if you have this combination of atoms, you cannot say that this is a result of karma of the living entities who were dormant before creation, because each jiva has his own reaction, his own karma, and he can't put that on the atoms. And he can't even put it on somebody else. So this is how they defeat this. So we have a very nice verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita, in case everyone's confused. This is Adi Lila, 2nd chapter, verse 1. Sri Chaitanya Prabhum Vande Bala Piyaranugrahat Taranana graha Vyaptam Siddhanta Sagaram. I offer obeisances to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by whose mercy even an ignorant child can swim across the ocean of conclusive truth, which is full of the crocodiles of various theories. So Prabhupada describes that this Paramanuvad and Buddhist philosophy, Patanjali, Gautam, all the six darshans, they're like dangerous creatures in the ocean of nations. Crocodiles. Why are they like crocodiles? Yes. Yes, they eat us up and then we lose it. We lose Krishna consciousness. So because of these different philosophies, we lose it. So therefore we have to worship Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to save us. Now in Krishna book, the wonderful thing about Śrīla Prabhupāda, see there's two versions of 10th canto, 87th chapter. We have it in our, of course, our Bhagavatam that was written after Śrīla Prabhupāda left. Then we have it in Krishna book. So in Krishna book, Prabhupāda does something very wonderful with these six darshans. He defeats each one with a verse from Bhagavad Gita, each of the six darshans. He just takes a verse from Gita and he defeats. So for this one of Paramanuvad, he quotes a verse from Bhagavad Gita. Anybody know which verse? No? That's a good one. But Matta 9-4. No, you're getting closer. Wait. No. Not ninth chapter, another chapter. Which verse could it be to defeat the part? Which chapter? Tenth chapter. Yeah. Paramanuvat. Yes, Aham Saras Prabhupada. Matta Saram Pravartate. Everything comes from me. And then he quotes Janmadhyasiyataha also. And then he quotes the Vedas, Eko Narayana Asit. Only Narayana existed before the creation. So this is, he uses these verses to defeat Paramanuvad. So Prabhupada says, therefore atoms may form the basic combinations of material existence, but these atoms are generated from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus the philosophy of Gautam and Kanad cannot be supported. So that's how Prabhupada defeats these philosophies in Krishna book, in that same chapter. So then Prabhupada was giving a, no, he wasn't giving a lecture. He has a morning walk in Mayapur, 1976. And he was discussing about this philosophy again. And Prabhupada said there's two kinds of atoms coming from Krishna. He said one is the spiritual atom and one is the material atom in this morning walk. So he said the spiritual atom is much, much greater than the material atom. And some of the spiritual atoms, when they want to enjoy independently, they are given the choice to a choice or chance to enjoy the material atom. So Prabhupada says there's two atoms. This is Prabhupada's Paramanuvad. So in this world, there's a combination of these two atoms, the spiritual atom and the material atom, he said in this morning walk. So then Guru Kripa Prabhu asked Prabhupada a question. If we say that Krishna goes inside, enters even the atom, what is Krishna's business there? What is Krishna doing in the atom? Guru Kripa asked Prabhupada.
Maintaining?
Okay. Maintaining the atom. What else? What happened to our generator? Is it dead or starving? Burned out? It burned, okay. Generator is burnt. Oh. Oh, the generator is also... Oh, okay, connect. Something, yes. My generator is also broken since yesterday, so I think, hope it's not my karma. Anyway. Okay, what's Krishna doing in the atom, Maharaj?
He's maintaining.
Maintaining, that's what he said. Yes?
Way of functioning in the universe.
Okay, the atoms have a purpose and Krishna is helping them to work properly.
And even the animals, they know what to do. And this can come only because Krishna is there, not only
life. And so, yes? You found it, Mar? Okay, go ahead. He's fulfilling desires of conditioned souls. Maharaj.
The other thing is that in the second canto, remember how the how from earth it becomes earth, fire.
Earth was the last.
As the Supreme Lord enters into each material world, it cannot transform into the next.
Okay, so he's helping in the creation, transforming all these things. But his purpose is even higher. Yes. We're getting closer. Witness? More than witness, yeah. Okay, yeah, you got it. Prabhupada said his business is to guide rascals like you. he said his business, because Guru Kripa said, what's his business? Prabhupada said his business is to guide rascals like you.
In every atom.
That's what he said. Well, there's, yeah, yes. Yes.
Science of God.
Oh, wonderful.
They do the job.
They prove the existence of God through science.
No, they do the job of our
education. Oh, they're doing our job.
But they come to a conclusion. They don't come up with a concrete idea of God, but
right.
Designer.
The designer. Oh, that's what somebody, who was giving class today? Prabhupada does, yes. And he was saying that our American president was saying it. It should be taught in the class, in the schools.
It's called the
intelligent design movement, and so he wants it to be taught in the schools in America, that there is a designer. So can they see the soul?
No, but they can see it's a very, very complex,
so complex. Complex.
It's an engine, basically.
Okay.
The information,
yeah, who is programming the computer?
What
yes.
And, right. Intelligence.
There is a design in intelligence. Okay. I'll just finish what Prabhupada said here. Because Krishna loves you so much, even you take this material atom you want to enjoy, accept this material atom, he goes to help you. So anyway, that's good news that they're accepting a designer, that there is a designer.
No, but that's, I think, obviously
clear. Yes.
I have an expression with Tom at some point. So.
Right, right. Yeah, no, it's a step up. Yeah, who is the designer?
Not only that, they say it's God.
But yes.
Exactly what's the
philosophy? Right. Right. Okay, we'll go to verse 10. Since this universe has no real ultimate existence, the things within it, shortness, differences, grossness, skinniness, smallness, bigness, result, cause, living symptoms and materials, and heat, are all imagined. We're just imagining we're hot. They're all pots made of the same substance, earth. It's just the earth that's hot, not us. But they are named differently. The differences are characterized by the substance, nature, predisposition, time, and activity. You should know all these are simply mechanical manifestations created by material nature. Can flip the flip chart. So yes, we have already written down here. It's just a bunch of names that we're feeling heat. It's just a name, heat, for our body. We're not actually hot. The body's hot. So here we've got the world of names, and we've got Dravya, Sabhava, Ashaya, Kala, Karma. So this was mentioned in the 11th chapter, that these are the causes of transformation of the mind. So our mind was feeling quite peaceful until the lights went off and the fans went off, and now our mind is thinking hot. See, just the difference between heat and cold. Of course, it wasn't cold, but anyway. So verse 10, it sounds like now he's saying the universe has no existence. Could this be? Is he preaching Mayavad philosophy here in verse 10?
No, it has no real ultimate existence. Real
ultimate. It's just a transformation. Sounds like.
It's asat, he says it in a sense.
Asat. So it's not Mayavad.
No real ultimate.
No real ultimate existence. Asa. Okay. So in the beginning of the purport, Prabhupada says, the temporary manifestations and varieties within this material world are simply creations of material nature under various circumstances. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai kamani sarisham. The actions and reactions carried out by material nature are sometimes accepted as our scientific inventions. Therefore, we want to take credit for them and defy the existence of God. This is described in Bhagavad Gita. Ahankar vimudhatma kartaham iti manyate. Due to being covered by illusory external energy, the living entity tries to take credit for the differentiated creations within the material world. Do we have, Adi Purush, do we have one of those battery speakers we can hook up here? Because I don't know how long my voice is going to last. Yeah. I hope it's charged. Ahankara vimudhatma. Actually, all these belong, these are being created automatically by the material force set in motion by the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Prabhupada is bringing us to the ultimate cause. Ishara Paramakrishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadiradi Govinda Sarvakarana Karanam. So there's a verse in the second canto, second chapter, verse 3, and it talks about the world of names, that we're living in a world of names. And then they came to some conclusion, Shukadev Goswami came to a conclusion about the world of names. Therefore, how should we act in the world of names? What shall we do while we're here in this world of names?
Dump.
Deaf, no, that isn't what he says. He doesn't say to become deaf, dumb, and dull. No. Yes. Sarvopati, yeah, that's a good idea. Engage your senses in the service of Rishikesh. Upadis. Get rid of your upadis or engage your upadi. Yes, Damana, did you raise your hand? No, you just scratched. Yes, it's very difficult. So another thing we should do is tolerate. But the verse says something else. So many things we should do, actually. When we're living in this world of names. And what the verse says is he should be intelligently fixed, never endeavor for unwanted things, being competent to perceive practically that all such endeavors are merely hard labor for nothing. So you shouldn't go after the things in the world of names. What happens if you go after something that in this it deludes you? It's like a mirage. So you try to catch it, but it disappears. It slips out of your hands. What happens if you do catch it? What? You lose it. Huh? You're disappointed. Or you might get entangled too. It's like a fly going into a spider's web. You get stuck. You go to catch this. It's also described as like a whirlpool. The material whirlpool. So you see something nice in the whirlpool and you stick your hand in to get it and then you get drawn into the whirlpool yourself. You get drawn in. So it's like that. You go after the things, but you don't realize that these things are stuck on the spider's web or else they're down in the whirlpool and you have to go down to get these things. There's so much endeavor just to get the things that we don't need in this world. Yes?
Right.
So we work for things in this world, but we don't. The reaction, the result, is not what we actually expect. Mostly, we get the opposite. So here in that purport, Prabhupada says, simply names, just like the babble of sea waves, no more significant, or like a dead body flapping for a few days. Yes, 223. 223. So then, if everything is changing, it's not the ultimate shelter, then what is our shelter? He's going to tell us in verse 11, our shelter. Jnanam viśuddham paramartam ekam anantaram tva bahir brahma satyam patyak prashantam bhagavat shakta sangyam yadvasudevam kavayavaranti. Verse 11. What then is the absolute truth? The answer is that non-dual knowledge is the ultimate truth. It is devoid of contamination of material qualities. It gives us liberation. It is the one without a second, all-pervading beyond imagination. The first realization of that knowledge is Brahman, then Paramatma, Supersoul is realized by yogis who try to see him without grievance. That is the second stage of realization. Finally, full realization of the same supreme knowledge is realized in the Supreme Person. All learned scholars describe the Supreme Person as Vasudeva, cause of Brahman, Paramatma, and others. So what is, in the Sanskrit, we have three levels or conceptions of the Absolute Truth. What is the Sanskrit for Brahman? Brahma, Satyam. And what is the Sanskrit for Paramatma? Patyak, Prashantam. And what is the Sanskrit for Supreme Person? Bhagavat Shabda Sangyam. And what is his name?
Vasudeva.
Yes, so very good. Sanskrit scholars. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us what is reality. This is reality. It's teaching us how to separate reality from illusion. This is reality, jnanam, abrahma satyam, patyak, prashantam, bhagavat, shabda, sangyam. Chaitanya Charitamrita said, Yadudvaitam Brahmapanishadi Tadabhyasya Chanuva. The impersonal Brahman effulgence of absolute truth consists of bodily rays of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Yatman Taryami Purushaiti Sashami Shavibha. What is known as Atma and Antaryami Supersoul is but an expansion of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sarai Sarjai Purno Yahiha Bhagavan Sayamayam. What is described as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, complete with six opulences, is Vasudev, and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is not different from him. Great learned scholars and philosophers accept this after many, many births. So aren't we lucky? We don't have to go through many births. We can accept it right now, immediately, Prabhupada says. If you're intelligent, you just accept it now and surrender to Krishna. The wise man, Vasudeva Saramiti Samahatma Sadurlabha. Wise men can understand ultimately Vasudev, Krishna, is the cause of Brahman and Paramatma, Supersoul. It says Vasudev, Sarvakarana Karanam, cause of all causes. So one devotee asked Srila Prabhupada that if you just go on doing your devotional service for satisfaction of Krishna, what about realizing Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan? What about these three? Do you go through these stages, like first Brahman, and then Paramatma, and Bhagavan? So, what did Prabhupada say about this? It's a package deal. You get Bhagavan, you get everything. Yes, that's what he said. He says, if you understand Bhagavan, then ultimately you will understand Brahman and Paramatma. You don't have to go through the three stages. But if you get Bhagavan, then you understand, then you also have relationship with Paramatma and Brahman, if you get Bhagavan. So verse 12, how to realize the truth. Rahuganaitat tabasaniyati nachejaya nirvapanat krihatma chandasanayavajalakni surya vinamalak pararajabhishekam. My dear King Rahugana, unless one has the opportunity to smear his entire body with the dust of lotus feet of great devotees, one cannot realize the absolute truth, cannot realize it simply by observing celibacy, strictly following rules and regulations of house servant life, leaving home as vanaprastha, accepting sannyas, or undergoing severe penances in winter by keeping oneself submerged in water, surrounding oneself in summer by fire and scorching heat of the sun. There are many other processes to understand the absolute truth, but the absolute truth is only revealed to one who has attained the mercy of a great devotee. So Rahugana had the two questions. Remember his two questions? What? Shelter and how to advance. So verse 11 answers the question of what is the most secure shelter. And verse 12 answers the question, how to advance. So the way you get the secure shelter is through the mercy of the pure devotee. So this is his answer. And Prabhupada says in the purport that if actual knowledge of transcendental bliss can be bestowed upon anyone by a pure devotee. And he quotes Brahma Samhita. One cannot attain the perfection of spiritual life simply by following directions of the Vedas. What verses say that? Not simply by Nayamatma Pravachena Bahuna Shutena. Any other verses? Bhagavad Gita or other literatures? Not simply by the Vedas. Tavidi. Acha, that's good. That's how to get it. How to understand the absolute truth by surrendering and serving a pure devotee. Tattva darshana. Bhaktya mam abhijanati. Yeah, and there's some verses that also say. What?
Wait.
Which verse is that?
Someone who is.
Oh yeah, I know. Yes, right. Not by impersonal meditation. Klesha?
11, 15,
Yeah, that's more 1153.
The form you are seeing with your transcendental eyes cannot be understood simply by studying the Vedas, not by undergoing serious penance, right, nor charity, nor worship. It's not by this means.
Not by Vedas. Yes, not by all these austerities. Can you see Krishna? So there's only, and also Mahabharata, Tarko Pratishta, Shutayo Vipina. The Shutas, Shutayo Vipina, there are so many Vedas. That will not give you the truth. Yes. Trigunya Vishaya Veda. Nishtrigunya Vivarcha. Be Nishtrigunya. So you cannot get the truth simply by studying the Vedas. Because Krishna is a property of his devotees. Kinshana. Akinshana Vitaya. Namo Kinshana Vitaya. So this is the way by the pure devotees.
The
pure devotee speaks, it's also Vedas.
And it's another type of bhakti.
So here I've got the reference from Skanda Purana about different kinds of hearers of Srimad Bhagavatam. I think this is a good time to read this. Those who hear Bhagavatam are two categories, Pravaras and the Avaras. Pravaras are superior, the Avaras are inferior. And the avaras, the inferior ones, no, we'll do the superior ones first, are four kinds. The chataka birds, the swans, the parrots, and the fish. So chataka bird, who is the chataka bird? He's famous, right? Yes. It flies into the clouds, and the only water this bird will drink is from the clouds. No other water. Chataka birds. So the Chataka devotee who hears Bhagavatam, he only hears Srimad Bhagavatam. That's where he gets his water. And the Hamsa, he takes the essence from various shastras. The parrot delights people by his speech. So the parrot listener pleases his audience by repeating what he has heard from authorities. The fish listener never utters a word. He doesn't even blink his eyes while absorbed in listening to Bhagavatam, as the fish listener of Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, now we hear about the other listeners, who are wolves. He doesn't blink. Blink his eye. Yes. He listens. Well, the fish, I don't think he has eyelids, does he? The fish? No, so he can't blink if he even wanted to. So I guess that's why the fish listener doesn't blink. Right. He doesn't
blink. No,
means he's so absorbed that he doesn't blink his eyes while listening to Bhagavatam. That's the fish listener.
Means so with rapt attention?
Yeah, rapt attention. Okay. Now we have four kinds of inferior listeners. There's the wolves, Burunda birds, bulls, and camels. The hearer who shouts gives pain to the speaker and sincere listeners, and who is very ignorant is like a wolf who inflicts pain upon the deer in the forest. The Burunda bird is found on the peaks of Himalayas. He may try to teach others, but he does not act according to his own advice. Burunda bird, listener. The Vrisha, bull, listener, cannot discriminate between what is essential and what is not. He accepts everything he hears blindly, like a bull that may indiscriminately eat night scrapes and wretched oil cakes. So from that I understand he may go to hear from someone who is not a Vaishnava also. You just go anywhere and hear. We have people like that, in Vrindavan especially. The Ustra, the camel listener, leaves aside the sweet things and delights in just the opposite, like a camel who grazes on bitter neem fruit, leaving aside mangoes. So that's the camel listener. He'll just take the bitter. There are many other types in these two divisions of listeners, and they are known by their behavior, caused by their inborn natures. So then it talks about the real listener. A genuine student of Srimad Bhagavatam is one who bows down to the book incarnation of the Lord, discards discussions of other things, desires to hear the pastimes of the Lord more and more, is humble, keeps his palms joined in reverence, is a trustworthy disciple, is interested in reflecting upon the question under discussion, is clean in body and mind, he is always respected by Krishna's devotees. Genuine speaker is one whose mind dwells in the Lord, does not expect reward for his preaching, has a good heart, who is compassionate toward the unfortunate souls that are rotting in this material world, who is clever in making people understand things from various angles of vision. So there's four more kinds of listeners. That is sattvic, rajas, tamas, and nirgun. The rajasic listener is a Bhagavat Sapta listener. He goes for 7 days. There's a huge, elaborate preparation, the loudspeakers, and so many decorations, and they give a lot of things to the speaker. So this is rajasic listening of Bhagavatam. Elaborate and strenuous preparations is a gala social occasion. It's a big social event. And just like the whole street will hear for 7 days, you can't sleep at night. So this is Bhagavat. I mean, Maharaj Pariksit had the choice, but you don't get the choice of whether you can sleep at night or not. You're going to hear it all night. So this is rajasic listening of Bhagavatam. The sattvic listening of Bhagavatam is a lengthy study involving a month or a season. It is not ostentatiously presented as a social event, therefore it does not require much effort. So this is sattvic listening of Srimad Bhagavatam. Tamasic is when you fall asleep. No. Procrastination. Study characterized by procrastination done without much faith or enthusiasm. Still, even this type of listening awards benefit. Okay, now we're here. Nirguna, this is the best. This is beyond the modes. When a devotee continuously studies or hears Srimad Bhagavatam in a mood of loving devotion, with no thought of there being a beginning or an end to his engagement, this is nirguna, or transcendental. So if you think, you don't think there's going to be beginning or end, then that's transcendental, because it's eternal. So this is, Maharaj Pariksit was doing this, his is nirguna, and because it only lasted 7 days, that's because he only had 7 days to live. Otherwise, if he had more days, he would have done more. So this is nirguna. So Bhagavatam is a remedy for all those who are disgusted with the suffering of material existence. So there's more, but that's the essence of what it's about. So verse 13. Skanda Purana. I don't have verses because it's just like a summary study, but it's somewhere in there. I think it's near the beginning of Skanda Purana. Oh, it is? Really? What, Skanda Purana? Or the quote? Oh, it's Bhagavat Mahatmya from Skanda Purana. Oh, okay. Bhagavat Mahatmya from Skanda Purana. Then you can find it in folio. Yeah. Chataka. Camel, wolf. And you can find it. Wolf. Verse 13. Who are the pure devotees mentioned here? In an assembly of pure devotees, there is no question of discussing material subjects like politics and sociology. An assembly of pure devotees, there is discussion only of the qualities, forms, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is praised and worshipped with full attention. In the association of pure devotees, by constantly hearing such topics respectfully, even a person who wants to merge into the existence of the absolute truth abandons this idea and gradually becomes attached to the service of Vasudev. So I remember that you girls... Sumangala and Avaduta, you were telling me that when you had some Mayavadi in your class, and that he was fighting all the way with the teachers and the students, but at the end, he was also changed, and he said, "Who am I? Who am I, actually?" And then he was advised to read Bhagavad Gita as it is, to find out who he was. And so this is Prabhupada's justice in the purport.
Lord Chaitanya's instructions, Gramyavarta Nakahibe, don't talk unnecessarily about news of the material world. Don't waste time. This is a very important feature in the life of a devotee. Devotee has no other ambition to serve Krishna. This Krishna conscious movement was started to engage people 24 hours daily in service of the Lord and His glorification. Students in this institution engage in cultivation of Krishna consciousness from 5 in the morning to 10 at night. They actually have no opportunity to waste their time unnecessarily discussing politics, sociology, and current events. These will go their own way. Devotee is concerned only with serving Krishna positively and seriously. So, in chapter 10, Maharaj Rahugana asked Jadabharat about his family, his history, and now Jadabharat is going to answer that question from chapter 10, verse 14. In a previous birth, I was known as Maharaj Bharat. I attained perfection by becoming completely detached from material activities through direct experience. And through indirect experience, I received understanding from the Vedas. I was fully engaged in the service of the Lord, but due to my misfortune, I became very affectionate to a small deer, so much so that I neglected my spiritual duties. Due to my deep affection for the deer, in my next life, I had to accept the body of a deer. So why is he describing his fall down? This is very significant, Prabhupada says. Yes? Okay, mark of integrity. Another reason is because, yes.
The king will also see that what can happen to him.
Yeah, the king will see what will happen to him. Sankirtan. Yes. This is the point. This is the point that he's saying without taking shelter of the feet, lotus feet of the guru, spiritual master, you cannot get the absolute truth. So Prabhupada says in the purport, he did not consult, this is near the end, he did not consult a spiritual master when he became overly attached to a deer. Consequently, he became strongly attached to the deer, and forgetting his spiritual routine, he fell down. So this is cause of fall down, not consulting guru. Because in chapter 10, Maharishi Hukana asked him, who are you? Whose family do you belong to? Like, you know, he wanted to know the history in chapter 10, right when he first met him. He said, who, you know, he wanted to know. So now he's answering that question from chapter 10. Okay, verse 15, 16. My dear heroic king, due to my past sincere service to the Lord, I could remember everything of my past life, even while in the body of a deer. Because I am aware of the fall down in my past life, I always keep myself separate from the association of ordinary men. Being afraid of their bad materialistic association, I wander alone, unnoticed by others. 16. Simply by associating with exalted devotees, anyone can attain perfection of knowledge, and with the sword of knowledge can cut to pieces the illusory associations within this material world. Through the association of devotees, one can engage in the service of the Lord by hearing and chanting Shravanam Kirtanam. Thus, one can revive his dormant Krishna consciousness and, sticking to the cultivation of Krishna consciousness, return home, back to Godhead, even in this life. So this is a promise by Jadabharat. If we stick to this chanting and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we can go back to Godhead in this life. I think Prabhupada added that, in even in this life. So Prabhupada always gives us more concession than anybody else. So Prabhupada added, even in this life, we can go back to Godhead. He was always saying that. You can flip the flip chart. I have some additional reference here from 7th Canto. Because here it's talking about... she didn't put it here, did she? Oh yeah, keep going. Oh, yes, yes. Yes, 7, what? I've got another one. 7:15:45, I think. Yeah. Okay, you can put it, flip it one more time. And see, yes. Gyanasim. Because in this verse it talks about Gyanasim, the sword of knowledge. So I've got it, the reference from 7:15:45.
Yavannikaya ratamatma vishopakalpam Tate garishta charana saraya nishatam Gyanasi machuta balo dadarashta shatru Svananda tushta upishan daidam vijayat. As long as one has to accept a material body with its different parts and paraphernalia which are not fully under one's control, one must have the lotus feet of his superior spiritual master and the spiritual master's predecessors. By their mercy, one can sharpen the sword of knowledge, and with the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's mercy, one must then conquer the enemies mentioned above. In this way, the devotee should be able to merge into his own transcendental bliss and give up his body and resume his spiritual identity. So we have the Gyanasim, that's a sword of knowledge. Prabhupada says in the purport that this sword of knowledge is given to us by Krishna. So if you're really serious, now who is really serious about going back to Godhead in this room? Who wants to go? Yes, Sharon, yes, everybody. Yeah, everybody wants to go back to Godhead. Okay, very good. So here's what you have to do. Prabhupada tells you in this purport. If you're serious, you must become strong by pleasing the spiritual master. Then you get this weapon with which to conquer the enemy. But simply getting the weapon is insufficient. The jnana asim, the weapon of jnana. You have to sharpen it by following the instructions of the spiritual master. So you get the weapon. So then you have this weapon, but you might have the weapon of knowledge, but you don't have any strength to hold the weapon. So where do you get the strength from? Balaram. Balaram. Balaram gives strength. Achyuta Bala. Balaram gives strength. So Prabhupada says, you should accept the sword of knowledge from Krishna and be strong with the mercy of Balaram. So therefore we worship Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan. So you can go and worship Krishna Balaram and you'll get, Krishna will give you the sword of knowledge and Balaram will give you the strength to hold the sword. So Balaram is represented by the spiritual master. And if you follow the instructions, then you're sharpening the sword of knowledge. So we'll stop here. Anybody have any questions? Guru Sivananda.
Could we think that last year we saw Daksha executing devotional services in the mode of ignorance, and then we saw how Dhruva Maharaj was in the mode of passion, and then we saw Prithu Maharaj coming to goodness.
Prithu Maharaj in goodness. And Dhruva in ignorance, did you say? Oh, wait, sorry. Daksha in ignorance. Dhruva in passion. And
then
Prithu in goodness.
Then we come to
Lord Shiva.
Rishabh Deva and Jatabharata both are going beyond and rejecting 100%
yes.
Bodily identification. So
right.
It's like pushing us to really give up completely this.
That's right. It's pushing us to give up our identification. And wait till you hear chapters 13 and 14. Then you'll understand the reality. What's the news of this material world? What's actually going on in this material world? You'll find out this afternoon. and tomorrow afternoon, and the next day. You'll find out for 5 classes what's the news. And by that time, after you hear those 5 classes, then you should give up all desire for enjoying in this world. And your false ego should be cracked. Yes, Madhavendra Puri. Oh, could be. Which questions? Uh-huh.
And how to administer.
But according to my notes, Bhurijan Prabhu said chapter 12. Also.
You repeat several times.
Several times. Because
you have to explain several times. Yeah.
Oh.
Chapter 10 or 11, you mentioned that.
Gotcha. Because in my notes I have from his class that he said chapter 12, you will get the answers to these questions.
Yes, there's repetition.
Yeah.
Well, the question is chapter is, I'm not clearly understanding. Can you explain again?
Right, he didn't get it. I didn't get it either, so that's why I got chapter 12. I missed the other chapters, so.
11 and 12.
11 and 12. Yeah, I missed 11, so I get it in 12.
But in 11, he didn't speak about himself.
Right, yeah, right. You know, he didn't answer the one from chapter 10.
Okay.
Chapter 10's answer was definitely in 12, about who he, I am this, I was a deer, I was Maharaj Bharat.
Yeah,
that one is most secure shelter. How to advance. Uh-huh. We should actually put one more thing up here. You can put Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan, and put an arrow down. That's the actual answer. Yes?
I have varieties.
Varieties.
So, reads those varieties.
Yes.
And their application or their attachment, detachment.
Yeah, the mind. The mind and how you're attached. Just like one person, he will say, oh, this is a very nice, useful thing. I can use this. Another person, oh, that's useless. What do you think that is? Or someone will say, this is good. Another person will say, this is bad. Same thing. Will be good for one person and bad for another. Atmavan manitejigat. So good and bad, all these are conceptions. But there's a thing, it's just a combination of atoms or dirt, as you will. But we're seeing it as, oh, this is a very nice person, or this is a very, this is young, so it's nice, this is old, so it's not nice. Yes.
Someone who has knowledge, material knowledge, will hear those varieties actually, and applications, and become attached to it.
Right. The person in ignorance, he will not see the use, but the person in passion, he will see a lot of uses. How to use everything for advancing his dharma, tikkama, moksha agenda. And the devotee will see everything also useful. The Mayavad, then there, you go to the spiritualists, and the Mayavadis, the Buddhists think everything is useless, and the devotees will see everything is useful for Krishna's service. Karmis will think it's useful, Gyanis will think it's useless, and the yogis, what will the yogis think? Ah, yes, I will become the controller of all these things. Yes, useful. Yes, I will use everything. He's a big enjoyer, a big karmi. Yogi is mahakarmi. And Gyani also. Gyani has big desires to become God also. Okay, any other questions or comments on this? Thank you everybody for tolerating the heat and for philosophical discussions. It's a very difficult situation. Hopefully, anyway, we'll make advancement by tolerating everything to hear Srimad Bhagavatam. Yes, Adi Purush Prabhu.
Difficult language.
Yes, yes. He doesn't do it directly.
Yeah, he answers indirectly.
He does. I mean, we find that often in the Vedas and in the... They use the indirect method. Yes, it is. Prabhupada says that, like Krishna in the beginning of Gita, he doesn't directly call Arjuna a fool. He just says, you know, this is how learned people see, and this is how a foolish person sees this way. The Prabhupada says, just like somebody steals your watch, and then you don't say, oh, there's a person, there's a thief. You just say it very indirectly. Oh, there is a person who stole my watch. I think I see the person who stole my watch. But you don't point to the person. So it's like indirect. Yeah.
Was it receptive?
Okay, so the question is, this indirect way of teaching, was it to make Maharaj Yuhagana more humble and receptive? Those who are Sanskrit scholars, do you know why the purpose of indirect? There's indirect and there's direct. He's trying to see if he's intelligent enough to understand what he's saying.
Because actually, he did not. He asked again the same question to make it clear.
Yeah, he didn't. He didn't understand. Yes, Patri.
Oh,
yes. So other fools, like the other palanquin queries, will think, "What are these guys talking about?" So the other fools wouldn't have asked. Actually, it's a fact. You know, just like this Gayatri book I got from Sachinandan Swami, he doesn't put the mantra in the book. And when he does the synonyms, he scrambles them. He doesn't put them in order. So anybody who would try to figure out what's the Gayatri mantra, you couldn't figure it out by reading his book. The whole book on Gayatri. You know, but if you try to read it, you can't, what's the Gayatri, you know? Yes? Right, so he gives the picture. Here's a fool, here's an intelligent person. The intelligent person will do this, the fool will do this. So you see who you are. You can figure out who you are. Then he did, actually he came to the point. He said, you think you're so such a good king, but actually you're exploiting. He did come to that point. First he said, there are palanquin carriers who are like, you know, just earth. He said, but actually you're exploiting. He did come to that point. There is fatigue, and you're the cause of that fatigue. They're tired of carrying you in their palanquin. So get off the palanquin.
I'm sorry.
Right? Get off. Don't give up. Later on, I think he'll say, just give up. Renounce all this idea of being king. I think in the next few chapters, perhaps he'll say that. But just forget you're not the king. You don't force these poor people to carry you around. What's the difference between you and them? Your dirt, their dirt. Why they should carry you? Yeah, Marvin.
I was thinking, so regarding this direct approach, the indirect approach.
Indirect approach.
Krishna has to be revealed indirectly because.
Yes.
Bhakti is sarahasyam.
It's quite confidential. The Vedas are indirect. Yes.
So Krishna.
That's why you can't understand Krishna from the Vedas. It's quite indirect. Who?
Sudam.
Oh, Sudama was shaving Shri Prabhupada. Could be. Could be. Yeah.
And then.
Nice ring.
And Sudama asking, when did you get that ring? So then Shri Prabhupada looked at Burijan and saying, someone gave it to me.
Burijan.
And he preserved the intimacy of
the intimacy.
Burijan's gift. Mm-hmm. So this is how.
Confidentiality is preserved.
Yeah, that is a loss for this intimacy of preservation.
Yeah, because how many of us. If we had just read some scholar's translation, or maybe we had read some books before we were devotees on the Vedas or something, how many of us understood the purpose that it was Krishna? You know, how many we read Gita maybe also? How many of us, it's not for those who aren't devotees. And then as soon as you become, you chant, then you understand. You chant, you do seva, and you understand what it's about. You may even read, you know.
You still understand gradually. It's not even.
Yeah, not the first day, no. It takes a while. Yes, I. 11th canto. Okay. The Vedas deal with esoteric terms, and I'm pleased by such confidential descriptions.
And in the first word, we have our. One may ask why the Lord Himself, as well as the Lord representatives, the Vedic seers and mantras, speak in esoteric or indirect terms.
Why do they speak indirectly?
As the Lord states in the Bhagavad Gita.
Why don't you give us the reference?
11:21:35.
Okay. 11:21:35.
Mahaprakashak Sarvasya, the Supreme Lord, does not allow himself to be taken cheaply.
Right.
And thus he is not manifest to superficial or mythical people.
He's not allow himself to be taken cheaply, so he's not revealed to superficial or inimical people. And that's why we have these indirect explanations. Even the Chaturshloki, there's a much deeper meaning behind it. If you read the Sandarbhas, you hear Burijan's classes, it's to do with the gopis feeling separation and from Krishna and how they actually realized Krishna. And he does talk about it in the purport of the third verse. Yes, Sankirtan.
Like that's in every field. Happened
that
those who are more expert to have their own technical jargon and
the
protection from
other people mingling into it. Yeah, the scientists.
They
have their own language, yeah. Even the pharmacist who gives you the the prescription, he has his own handwriting.
Yeah,
so you can't read.
An imposter has to first, if he wants to be one of them, he has to at least learn the language.
You have to learn the language, yeah.
Himself,
yeah, they have a secret language. Jambavan, one of our gurukulis, he was very expert in computers. And he never went to high school, he never went to any school practically. Gurukul, you know, which he didn't learn how to do anything, I mean, as far as the outside world. And then he went for a job in this huge company. And they said, okay, you think you can do it without going to school? So they gave him, you know, they were talking to him in all this language. And he knew everything, you know. So, okay, you have the job. So if you.
In North Carolina?
No. Another one. Patrice?
Yeah, I was thinking when Krishna and Gopi sometimes they speak in such a language that nobody can understand.
Right. They have their own language, Krishna and the gopis.
They give twist and dual meaning.
They give a twist.
The twist and the dual
meaning. You know,
it's dual meaning, yes. So the mothers-in-law, they don't catch on. Adipush.
In Prema Samputa, it says that if you openly speak about love, the love dwindles.
If you openly speak about love, the love dwindles. This is from?
Brahma
Samputa.
Prema
Samputa.
So therefore, it is always spoken of in the opposite way.
It's spoken of in the opposite way.
To preserve
the
truth and freshness.
Mm-hmm. To preserve the truth and freshness. Yes.
It might be a saying of Vaishnava Maharaj. He says that prema swirls like a snake.
Prema swirls like a snake. Yes, and if you...
It's not straightforward.
Yes, it's not straightforward. So even the cunningness and the not being straightforward, that's... this part of the spiritual world. Although a Brahmin is straightforward, but then you get on a higher... That's why the Brijbasis, they don't believe when Krishna says something. You can't trust him. Yes?
One of the reasons because the Goswamis did not write in Bengali or in Hindi as they could have done is because simple people would not read and speculate. That means you should be very highly qualified to read those books.
So they wrote in Sanskrit so that a qualified person would have to understand, not simple Bengali and Hindi. Was there Hindi? There wasn't Hindi then, was there? Yeah? Hindi? Okay. There was Hindi. But they didn't write any books in Hindi.
Tosidas.
The six Goswamis, they wrote Sanskrit. Some Bengali, no? No Bengali. Krishna's cover, yes. Okay.
They had bhajans, they had some bhajans.
Bhajans. Okay.
The Goswamis did write in
Brijbhumi. Brijbhumi. What do you call it, Prakrit?
Vishwanathakuri is reputed to try and simplify his.
Vishwanathakuri simplifies.
In simple Sanskrit.
Sanskrit.
If you compare, for example, Rupa Goswami's poetry, for example,
right.
He tried to popularize among
Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Tried to simplify.
You still have to know Sanskrit.
But you still have to know Sanskrit, yeah. And that requires quite a bit of study. It's not that easy. Like the common people, they weren't speaking in Sanskrit. Okay. Anything else? Okay, we'll stop here. All glories to Shiva.